This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh, together with Sharit Sabdullah. This is the morning run on BFM 89.9. It's February 4th, 2019, the eve of Chinese New Year. And if you're celebrating the Lunar New Year, we wish you and your family Gong Xi Fa Chai. And happy holidays to those who are not celebrating this festive season. And for all of you on the road, we wish you a smooth journey and safe travels. So Sharit, what will you be doing for the next 2 days?
I think I'll try and catch up with some friends. Mm. I haven't actually called them personally and checked out, but I think most of the time you'll probably just be texting, wishing everybody a happy Chinese New Year. And happy Chinese New Year to you, Joyce.
Thank you. Thank
you. Hope you're going to have an excellent 2 days, and also to the rest. How about you? How's your next 2 days going to look like?
Pretty packed. I think we've been busy preparing. I think celebrations kind of already started over the weekend.
Wow.
There was a lot of makan-makan
really?
And all that, catching up with family, catching up with friends. Yeah, it's going to be nonstop eating, I think. And catching up with family. And of course, there's the ang pao.
Yes!
And all that.
The ang pao for my children.
Yes, you better get them ready because tomorrow is the day to start giving them out. Yeah.
Cool.
So we're going to kickstart the day with a look at some interesting topics over the next hour.
That's right.
What are some of the stories we'll be talking about?
Okay, well, today is finally the day where I was unfortunate to not get a Grab this morning.
Oh.
Yeah, so I had to cycle here.
Wow. Good so, exercise, though.
Well,
maybe
yeah.
All the Grab drivers already balik kampung.
Yeah, fair enough. But to Grab's credit, they did inform everyone to, you know, get them, you know, just to plan ahead because there could be shortage of drivers. But speaking of drivers, there's also Grab deliveries. I do that over the weekend. Mm. And so what they do is they send over food through, you know, the Grab riders. Now they come via motorcycle. So there could Grab be a solution for inequality, I was thinking. So we'll talk about that.
Interesting. Well, it's the Chinese New Year season, as we were talking about. And you know what's often synonymous with Chinese New Year is ang baos, lion dances, and fireworks.
Yes.
Well, that's not until fireworks was banned, right? So there's a suggestion now that this ban should be lifted. So we're going to discuss about that later on.
Cool. Mm. All right. So the next one, Joyce, like something you and me would probably think about, marriage, as they say, through sickness and health and all this happiness. You know, we come across bumps and, you know, along the way. Mm-hmm. So, and one of those bumps that I think a lot of people face is the financial side, right? So CNBC wrote something, 1 in 5 Americans living with their partners while they hide their accounts and credit cards. So we'll see. Yeah, how do you feel about financial privacy?
Well, so much to talk about. But first, we'll be discussing how McDonald's is changing the way they package their Happy Meals. That's coming up after the break. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run at BFM 89.9. Joyce and Sharit's here with you this Chinese New Year Eve. That was It's Not the Spotlight by Rod Stewart. And, well, what's in the spotlight now is McDonald's handing out free Roald Dahl books in New Zealand. I think they're repackaging the way they do their Happy Meals. You know, usually it comes with toys, and that's what usually kids look forward to. Actually, I personally think the toys are quite cute.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
They have different, I don't know, trends and different kind of toys, different kind of themes.
Mm.
And they package it. It's actually very current.
Yeah,
but I think
this
move towards books is really great as well. Keeping up with the times. Also to encourage children to read more. Do you think this will work? Work?
Well, I don't know. This seems like we might... you know, it's a crazy battle, isn't it? I mean, trying to promote kids with books, especially with now kids being exposed to tech gadgets. I was reading this. I don't know if this could work. And as you know, this is a question between MacD versus gadget. So that's how I'm looking at it. And but it's definitely a positive initiative, at least on the McDonald's side, trying to, you know, introduce kids to books and, you know, going away with toys. And I look forward to it.
Yeah, whether or not it can help encourage kids to read, I think that's great too. I mean, as a kid, Happy Meal is something that definitely, if they walk into a McDonald's, that's something that they'll definitely want to buy.
Yes.
The whole packaging as well, the whole unboxing experience, I think that is the attraction of the Happy Meal as well. And if for them to put in a book, like you say, McDonald's versus Tag, I think it could be quite a good game between the two, because McDonald's is quite a big, I mean, when for a kid to walk into a McDonald's and buy a Happy Meal, to them, that's something, it's something fun, right? And if a book is in that box, that might be something to them. They might, hey, this is quite cool. And that might help them read. Encouraging kids to read, I think that's very important right now, especially say in the world of tech.
Sure.
Whether, you know, what are the other ways we can, you know, do to help kids read? Do you think reading to them at night will help? Or, you know, sometimes when you are walking with them, like just in the shopping mall, just reading out the signs, do you think that will help as well?
Yeah, well, I think I've read that before. I think parents that read to their children at night could sort of foster that behavior for, you know, for children to start reading. And, and you mentioned just now McDonald's do have a big impact. I don't know if it's the color red, is the nuggets or the fries. And yeah, I mean, when you put two, you know, you put two and two together, I mean, books and McDonald's association, it could make it more appealing to them. So, again, kudos McDonald's for doing this, but I think it goes beyond that as well. You're a print advocate, you're a paper advocate. How do you encourage your kids to read more?
I read to them every night.
Oh,
and of course,
nice.
Wherever, like, I go to the shopping mall, even like on the aeroplane, like in an aeroplane ride, we'll pull out this, you know, the security, what's that, the pamphlet that we never read?
Yeah.
And then we will read it to them. You know, just small, small things that, you know, and they just point to them. And they love, sometimes it's the small things. Sometimes you just point, hey, you know, what's that? And they'll be like, oh, you know, just a sign. And I'll just read it to them. But of course, they're not reading full-on newspapers yet.
Yeah, but just
books, reading at night,
I have friends who is like that, who would collect pamphlets, for an example, from Toys R Us and just, you know, let their kids flip through. I mean, it may, you know, of course, the focus is still on toys and not really on reading, but I guess it's just flipping the papers, trying to catch words or whatever that they could apply, you know, from that pamphlet that they have. But I'm looking at this article, and there's like the list of titles that they're looking at giving away in the Happy Meals. For an example, you know, the famous one, I mean, that I'm familiar with at least, is the Willy Wonka Matilda. But I have to admit, though, I mean, it wasn't through reading books, it was through watching movies when I was growing up. So again, now with gadgets and media, How do you convince, you know, I don't know how I'm going to try and convince my kid to, you know, stay focused for a long time on a full-on book rather than...
But it doesn't need to finish. I mean, they don't need to finish the whole book. It's just a bit. Sometimes like a page or two might help.
Yeah.
And I think what McDonald's is doing is they're trying to be current and relevant, because even they are going into the whole concept of healthy eating. No longer fast food. Sometimes you have the option of choosing between, I guess, a salad or fruits rather than fries. I think a different kind of, I think in Thailand or what, there's this option where the kids can choose, apple slices instead of french fries. Here as well, perhaps corn instead of fries. So even McDonald's is trying to go into the way of healthy eating, and then now encouraging reading. That's great. Well, we're going for a break. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9, and we'll be talking a lot more about other topics after that. Stay tuned. Good morning. Joyce and Sharitz here with you on The Morning Run. That was Death in Midsummer by Deer Hunter. Well, can a marriage be facing death in the face if there is no trust? And I guess trust is perhaps the number one predictor of a couple's long-term success.
Yeah.
But according to a new this survey by creditcards.com, it found that 19% of people in live-in relationships are hiding a bank account or credit card information from their spouse or romantic partner. That's about 29 million Americans.
Right.
What does that all say?
I don't know. I mean, 1 out of 5 in America, but I don't know. You know, we're not sure how it's like in Malaysia. But when it says hide, to what extent are we talking about here? I mean, are we saying that there's no excess, that the spouse or, you know, your better half does not know exactly what is going on with your financial life, does not, completely clueless? I mean, is that the extent, or are we talking about just what is the figures in your how much you owe or how much money you have in your bank account. But one out of five, do you think is that an alarming number?
Well, personally, I think if you're going to get married, I think it'll be good to know what each other, I mean, if you beat debt or what, it'll be good to have, the debt position or what kind of loans you have or your financial aspirations. I think it's good to trash that all out before you tie the knot. Because, you know, when you marry, you also marry, to me, I think you also marry kind of the other person's finances in a way, because you're starting a family together. You're going to, in a way, become one, right? It's a partnership. I always feel marriage is kind of like a partnership, you know, and you're in it together. It's a team.
I know. I mean, I wish I could relate to that. The way I got married was completely different. We were definitely honest about our finances, but I don't know if that was the main sort of criteria for us. For an example, I think it was very clear. This is getting
personal.
Yes, that's right. But I mean, one thing, the confidence, you know, my in-laws, my back then future possible in-laws, I mean, for them, it was more of whether or not I'm capable of holding my family together. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, that responsibility. Do I have a job, for an example? Mm-hmm. I mean, am I a nice guy? Do I treat people with respect? I mean, do I truly love my then going to be
fiance
mm-hmm. and soon to be wife. So those were the things I think that they took into consideration. But I still remember I did meet a parent that says that the condition of marrying off their daughters would be a down payment for a house. And that was the minimum requirement, a down payment of the house. So I could see how finance is always a, you know, sort of like a subject before you get into a serious relationship like marriage.
But that paid off, right? Because then after that, you kind of have a roof over your heads. Is that what the people are saying?
I
think some parents would like that for their kids. But this article, I think the survey is more of whether or not partners, whether you're in a relationship, do you have to reveal everything with regards to your finances to your other half in a way. And I think the survey also found that millennials, that's between those between 18 to 37, that's quite a big gap, were twice as likely as older generations to keep such a secret when it comes to finances.
And I can see the difficulty in that. I mean, for an example, here's one question I would have. Would your soon-to-be partner or spouse be responsible for for all the excesses that you had before you get into a relationship, right? But I don't think that should stop them. I mean, and whatever that happened then, whether or not they have the freedom to sort of work it out on their own, whether or not, you know, they can problem solve it later on, and they should have that autonomy.
But if you marry and you actually sign the dotted line together, wouldn't whatever debt you have kind of be also your spouse's in a way?
Yeah,
that's why
true.
I think a lot of when you go to all these premarital counseling courses, a lot of them do encourage for each other to be honest and open to your other half.
That's right.
Be it where is your financial position, or do you have any debt or credit cards and all that. You should just be upfront about it. That's also, I think that's quite important. And also, because if you're going to be in it for the long haul, because if you're getting into a marriage, that's kind of like forever, right? Like you say, till death do you part, right? If you already have outstanding loan and all, I think you should be open about it.
Yeah, it's definitely a very uncomfortable subject for a lot of people, I can imagine. But I would say 4 out of 5, based on this survey, still do all right. But you're right, open and honest, it's the most ideal thing to have. But I can understand how a 20% of the population would have trouble with that. I mean, everybody has got their own insecurities and stuff. But again, it has to be done. And one solution I remembered one solution is doing is a shared account. I mean, that's convenient. That keeps everything in check. Everybody is aware of their responsibilities and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us what you think. WhatsApp us to 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going into the song right now, Better Be Home Soon by Crowded House. And that's to those making their way back for the Chinese New Year Eve reunion dinner tonight. And after that, we'll have the 6:30 news bulletin. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9. Hello there, you're listening to The Morning Run with Joyce Goh and Sharitz Abdullah. That was Friday I'm in Love by The Cure on this Monday that feels like a Friday.
Yes, that's right.
Well, Chinese New Year is tomorrow, Sharitz, and Ong Boon Piao has suggested a lifting of the ban on the import of firecrackers and fireworks to put an end to illegal smuggling. So what he's saying is that this, in a recent statement, the Bercham Assembly person said the move could improve the festive atmosphere of the celebration, provided its use is regulated by the government. What do you think of this?
I'm totally for it.
Yeah?
I mean, I grew up with fireworks during celebration, at least for Hari Raya, you know. Mm. But I still remember Chinese New Year as well. The flare, the noise and everything. It really does make festive season more exciting. And despite, I don't know how long it has been since the ban's been up, but despite the ban being up, we could still hear firecrackers like cracking all around, not just Chinese New Year, Hari Raya, even some odd days in between as well. Yeah. There's nothing to celebrate, and suddenly, boom, there's fireworks, right?
That's true.
So, how do you feel about, I mean, about firecrackers? You're a mom, you have boys at home.
Actually, I didn't realize how, but I've never been, personally have never been a fan of firecrackers. I prefer the fireworks. You know, the bunga api, the one that, you know, you can sparklers kind.
Tame.
Yeah, I'm a scaredy cat when it comes to fireworks. Yeah, yeah. But I can understand the whole festive appeal of fireworks. People like, you know, when it comes to Chinese New Year, Hari Raya, festive beers, even New Year, even January 1st, you know, you go to KLCC, look at the fireworks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's often associated to festivities. Mm. But I can understand that you need proper regulation if they do lift the ban, because of, you know, it can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. And you have sometimes young kids playing firecrackers on their own. Definitely you read of stories of some young kid, you know, blowing off their fingers and all that. Yeah, it can be very dangerous. But I can understand what he's saying, because as you mentioned as well, Sharitz, you know, it's illegal, but you still hear firecrackers and all that. So where are they buying these firecrackers? And definitely through, I guess, illegal means. And who makes money from that?
Yeah.
You know, imagine the leakages and all that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's like you said, there's leakages. Mm. And there's no way of stopping it, because there's definitely a demand for it, right? I mean, people still want to buy it. And again, that question of regulation, I think that would be a positive step rather than a complete ban.
Yeah.
I mean, before, I think it was that extreme. There was no regulation at all and people were buying. And again, some people, they there's no supervision. Parents don't monitor their children. Mm. Next thing you know, kids get into, you know, kids get into trouble and so forth. So perhaps regulation is the way to go. For an example, I mean, they're in the UK and I think in New Zealand and Australia, all these countries, they celebrate Guy Fawkes, for an example. I think it's a celebration of this guy that that used to go against the government way back in the 1800s or something. V for Vendetta is the movie. Now, they annually they celebrate Guy Fawkes, and I think they sell really, you know, loud fireworks. I mean, you know, those really nice-looking fireworks. And again, it's regulated. So it's only certain time of the year where fireworks are being sold. And again, they are, I guess, there's clear enough instructions. And I think perhaps parents are well-reminded, or perhaps they regulate 18 and above. So parents have to buy them or something like that. So when parents are aware of these fireworks, kids having access to fireworks, they you know, they'd probably be more supervision. I mean, it's all about mindset and stuff.
That's true. And also, I guess, limit the what kind of fireworks or firecrackers that can be used. Maybe the less dangerous ones, if there are out there.
Yeah.
I think there are two types of fireworks and firecrackers that are exempted from the 1994 federal ban. That's the pop-pop, you know, the one that you throw and it pops. And also happy boom fireworks.
I don't know.
Not sure what's that.
Yeah, not too sure. But again, it's as you said, when it's regulated, there's also opportunities for tax revenue as well for the government. So I guess, it's good for the government and people are more happier out
win-win
there.
Win-win for all.
So,
well, tell us what you think. WhatsApp us at 01-8789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going for a break, so stay tuned to The Morning Run at BFM 89.9. Welcome back. Joyce and Sharit's here with you on The Morning Run. That was Lovin' Touchin' Squeezing by Journey. Well, what some young people are doing these days is to squeeze in some extra cash by doing food delivery that's been offered by the gig economy. Is this the answer to youth unemployment, Sharit?
I think it is. I mean, you know, we've always talked about social ills and people who are, you know, not being productive and they spend their time on their motorcycles and, you know, not knowing what to do. So, I mean, since the advent of Grab delivery, I think I've seen them in uniforms on the road. You know, they're ready with their Grab delivery sort of box at the back of the motorcycle ready to provide a service for the public. So, and this article is great. I mean, it's showing the details as to how much they're earning and the sort of impact they are, you know, it's the impact that it has on this, all the Grab riders and so forth. I'm totally for it. And especially for me, I'm a avid Grab service user. You know, I take Grab to work. I take Grab food deliveries at home on occasions because, you know, sometimes the perks are really attractive.
Yeah, so this article came out in the Malaysian Insight. So what you're saying is that youths, they are turning to food delivery for extra cash. And they interviewed a number of them. I think or some of them said that, you know, without their part-time job, their monthly income is less than 2,500 ringgit. So that's insufficient given the rising cost of living. So what they're doing is, I guess it's good they are taking the initiative to look for part-time jobs as a way as opposed to, you know, wasting their time away or waiting for handouts.
Yeah.
I think that's good that they're showing initiative.
Yeah.
So maybe the gig economy is creating a lot more revenue streams or income streams for different people, be it food delivery or I guess e-hailing or even other gig economy things that, you know, they can think about. What this article says is that it's interesting. This person that they interviewed, he quit his delivery man job as a handphone supplier and he became a full-time food delivery rider and he now makes about 5,000 ringgit a month.
Yeah, so that's a substantial, that is a quite a substantive amount, I would say. I mean, because at least from our understanding, our perception over, you know, dispatch drive riders, for an example, I think they probably make just either minimum wage or just slightly over than that. And some of them have got family and this is working out quite well. If you could make 5,000 ringgit a month, I mean, I'm sure that helps alleviate quite a number of things. But however, it comes with a price though, Joyce. I mean, some of these riders, they have a full-time job during the day. So that's sort of like a stable platform. Should there be an actual rainy day or, you know, a rainy day when people don't ask for service through Grab application. I mean, the Grab service. So what they have to do is they have to work after the 5 o'clock job. So 9 to 5. And then after that, they have to sort of go out and still, you know, find ways to make more money. Now, it does bring that question, you know, that does it take a toll on someone's health and, for example, someone's family? I mean, those are the things I would immediately think about. Again, the emphasize now, the one thing is that we have 5,000 ringgit doing Grab. Just hope that the focus on trying to increase the minimum wage, you know, to increase the livelihood of people just by doing a 9 to 5 job, we don't lose focus on that.
Well, a couple of comments coming in on this. We have Oliver Howard tweeting in saying, you know, whether or not the gig economy is the answer to youth unemployment. He says no, but much, much better than nothing. Should capitalize on that. And we also have someone commenting saying that, you know, when it comes to the gig economy or Grab, or not Grab, but just in general, the gig economy, it may not be a secure job because if you get sick, you know, and you want to take some time off, you could lose out on the pay. Yeah. So yeah, that's a good point to make as well. Well, let us know. You can WhatsApp in your thoughts on this, 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Yeah, we'll be right back after this song and the 7 a.m. news.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.